Hello and welcome everybody. I'm Richard from the Veggie Grower Podcast. This is episode 168. It's the 14th of May 2018. And today I am going to be talking about how I attract slug and snail predators. And that's following on from last week where I spoke about slug and snail control. Unfortunately, I kind of thought after I produced it that how I go about attracting slug and snail predators would be a good podcast on its own. So I thought I'd do that this week. Of course, I've got the diary as normal and then what the calendar suggests to do for the next week. So let's get on and discuss the diary. So last Tuesday, I was working in the garden centre and I happened to see they had trays of vegetables going off cheap, a pound a tray, and there were 12 plants in each tray. So I brought a tray of cabbage and a tray of cauliflower. So I can't say much more about that. I just thought they were such a bargain, I had to get them. And a pound for 12, I mean, that's what, 8p a plant? If they all grow? Not much money, is it? So, and they were perfectly good. They just were coming to the, they needed to be planted out pretty soon. But I got them home and gave them a good watering, as well as all the other plants in the greenhouse and the various areas that are needing a lot of water at the moment with the heat rising. And that evening, I also spent some time potting on more plants and getting them out to the cold frame so they can harden off. And then the plants that are in the cold frame, I'm moving those out to the outdoor shelves and getting them ready to be planted out, which I'm hoping to do in a very, very near future. Wednesday after work, now I was having my appearance with the Bald Explorer live show. And as we do on there, we cook food that comes out of my allotment of vegetable patch live on the show. And I've really enjoyed my time with on the show, working with Richard. He's become a really good friend. And the members of the Bald Explorer group have been very welcoming. I know some of you have started listening to the podcast now, so thank you very much for coming along. And it's been really, really good boost, shall we say. But because I knew we were going to be cooking live on stage, I went to the allotment just after work and got a few bits. I got some asparagus, some herbs, some rhubarb, various other things like that. And then, of course, I went round to his house and we started the show at 8 o'clock. And on what was I cooking this week? It was like a herby chicken, asparagus, purple sprout and broccoli all in one pan, butter, all cooked together with a load of herbs. It was really nice. It took about 20 minutes to cook. Before that, we had some rhubarb cordial that I'd made, and then for afters, we had some rhubarb strudel muffins. It really went down well, despite the problems with Facebook comments not working, but again, I just love being on that show. It's been really good outburst in there. Yeah. I hope many of you were watching. If so, I'd love to know how you thought of it. We do have another one planned on the 30th of May, so not long to go, a couple of weeks. It's Wednesday again. But this time we're going to mix it up. We will be coming live from my allotment, and that should be a lot of fun. We're going to get the barbecue going to cook, and we're going to, yeah, it's going to be fun. I've also got plans to do a podcast with Richard. Although he's not a vegetable gardener, I'm going to try and get his reaction to the allotment sort of thing and see what he thinks sort of thing. I think, you know, be good. Be good. So Thursday after work again, I've potted on and moved more plants around, a lot like I was doing Tuesday, and this is a constant thing at the moment. I did notice, when I get home from work, I like to let the chickens out of their coop, and so they have free range of the garden. Well, Grills just didn't seem herself. She seemed very, very withdrawn, and I was a bit worried about her, but She looked okay. Her comb and everything, her eyes were bright. She just seemed withdrawn. And she went off to bed pretty early for her. She's normally the later one. But she went off early and what have you. So Friday, the next day, obviously, I let her out and she seemed herself. So I thought, okay, fine, no problem. And in the evening, again, she seemed back to herself. So perhaps she was just having an off day. I don't know. Then Saturday, I was at home. I was on call, so I couldn't really plan to do a huge amount. But I was moving around potted plants and potting on more plants, including 25 cucumbers and 30 courgette plants. I don't quite know what I'm going to do with that many plants. Courgettes, 4 is the most I'll need, and that's probably too many. So, yeah, I've got 30 to find something to do with. Oh, fine. I might give some away to friends and family and what have you. So they're not going to be wasted. I think I probably sowed them that many because the seed was going out of date and I just wanted to use them up. Now, I was keeping an eye on Grills throughout this, and in the morning she seemed okay, but later on she seemed withdrawn again. But then a bit later on in the morning, I spent a bit of time fiddling with my lawnmower, I wanted to mow the lawn, really. Typical, didn't quite start, but I did get it working, and I mowed the lawn. And this is leading me to the conclusion that this mower has got to go. I'm spending too much time fixing it. And as I said, it's an old lawnmower. And this has led me to think about whether I stick with petrol or look at battery or electric. I've got several thoughts on this, but I would like to open up to see if anybody else would be interested in debating garden power tools and whether to go petrol, electric or battery on a Skype conversation that I could use in a future podcast. If that is of interest to anyone, then please email me, richard@thevegrowerpodcast.com. I think it would be a pretty good discussion to have and to debate between us all. Now, after mowing the lawn, I had a knock at the door, and it was a postman, and he arrived with a part for my strimmer. Now, my strimmer had like a nut that had a spring and a pin in it that you would pull to separate the two pieces of the shaft to make easy storage. That bit had gone missing, and I didn't know where it had gone. So I ordered a new piece, which thankfully arrived Saturday. Managed to fix that. It took me 5 minutes. And that's got my strimmer working. It's so much easier having that correctly fixed. And then I spent a bit more time moving things around in the garden, which is a complete and utter tip at the moment, but that's because of what happened today, which I'll come back to in a bit. Sunday morning, I got up and I let the chickens out. Oh, well, I opened the chicken coop. Grills did not come out the coop. She seemed to stay in. I was really, really worried. I opened up the nest box and I saw she was in there, but she went outside pretty much as I opened it. So closed it back down, checked on her. She ate, she drank. I went back indoors and then didn't see her again. She'd gone back into the coop. So I opened up the coop and sure enough she was there and went back outside into the run. So I've checked her over. She looks okay. I'm just not sure what's going on with her. But I left her for the day and I headed down the allotment. I was researching what could be wrong with her at the same time. So, yeah. Anyway, I headed down the allotment. My first job was to tackle the strimming, which I try and do every week at the moment. And now that I've fixed the strimmer, it's a much easier job. Last week I tried holding the two pieces of a shaft together. It was heavy. After the strimmer was done, I then weeded a lot of the beds that I kind of planted up, ready to go and what have you. And there was quite a few weeds that had been popping up. Thankfully, the work I'd done last week, where I really spent some time on it, has helped. And it didn't take me all that long to get around it all. This then meant I could plant out several plants that I took down with me. And I planted out some peas, some broad beans, some more onions, both the large ones and the red ones. To be honest, it's probably a bit late to plant out the onions, but they needed doing. It was time to do it. And I also planted out the cabbage and cauliflower. Again, they needed to go out, and they seemed pretty happy, to be honest. After that, I also sowed a couple of rows of parsnips using the seed tapes. Now, the parsnips I've actually sown into an area that's been heavily manured, which I know they say leads to forked parsnips. Well, the trouble I'm having, and I can verify this because I've lifted the netting that was over the carrots, and the carrots have not grown at all. I sown those a week ago, and they've just not germinated at all, which is really disappointing. But then I thought last year I had the same trouble, and the year before I had the same trouble. When I pop this down, I've got that really heavy clay soil, and unless the soil is really friable, I think the seeds might germinate, but they have trouble pushing it down because it gets capped, especially with the rain over the winter and stuff. Even though I try and free it up, and of course, when the sun gets on it and it bakes, it's clay. It goes hot, goes hard. So I spent, I've been doing a bit of research because, as you know, I do no dig gardening. And I've heard several people now say that in no dig gardening, it's fine to sow carrots and parsnips in manured or composted areas. So I thought I'd give it a try and we'll see if they germinate and if they grow. If they do, all well and good. What I find ironic, I done a video a few weeks ago when I sowed the carrots, and I titled it "The Easy Way to Sow Carrots," purely because of the fact that they don't need thinning out as they grow using these seed tapes. Well, I shot myself in the foot with that, didn't I? This is not really an easy way to grow carrots. It hasn't grown carrots at all, but I do like the seed tapes, and I've used them in the past. They do. I know they work, and I hate thinning out the best time. I find it one of those annoying, fiddly jobs that just irritates me. So after the parsnips, I then started weeding out the very, very top of my plot. And this is where I got, I'd done the rhubarb bit up there a few weeks ago. I've just been running a hoe through that bit, but the rest is where I've got some raspberries and some currants that were put in there by the previous tenants. Well, this area, the weeds, because everything's growing in it, it's difficult to get a hoe through. So the weeds have really got long and the grass has got long. So it's one of these areas that I know it needs a lot of work and a lot of care. And now it's kind of the last area that needs it. But now I've got the rest done and up to scratch, it's not going to take long just to do a bit of weeding. I should be able to just kind of keep going through it and keep on top of it. That's my plan anyway. What I tend to do, when I start weeding, which is one of the first jobs I always do because it's one of my most annoying jobs, I will start with the areas that are pretty much under control and just pull those out. And as I work my way around, the last area I will do, and when I've got as much time as possible, is that top bit. Once I had done that and kind of had enough for the day, I headed home and I've cleaned out the quail, which I normally do on a Sunday anyway. I then cleaned out the chickens and I kind of let the chickens roam about the garden, like I normally do again in the evenings. I was taking down the chicken run extension because of what's happening today, and two, it's that time of year when they're going to be planted up. Now, grills did seem to have bounced back again. She seemed fine. But a bit of my research did read that perhaps it might be worth giving her a warm bath and see if that helps. So I done that. She wasn't keen on it, but once she calmed down, she kind of sat in there and enjoyed it. She hasn't laid eggs for the last few days, but she does look healthy and a good comb, bright-eyed, and what have you. After that, I continued potting up and hardening off, as well as watering everything. And watering is a daily job at the moment, which I don't mind. I quite like watering. obviously Saturday afternoon, it rained quite heavy in the afternoon and evening, so I didn't need to water then except in the greenhouse and potting shed. Now today, I've said there was something going on today. I've mentioned it in previous podcasts, and that was my fence has finally been replaced. Now I've gone for a company called Colour Fence, which is like it's a metal fence, but it looks really good. I'm really pleased with it, actually, if I'm honest. There was a difference of £200 between the wooden one and the metal one. And the Colour Fence ones are guaranteed for 25 years. Don't need painting every year, or very little maintenance, just the occasional washdown. So £200 for that I didn't think was too bad. Obviously, that was the difference between £200 was the difference between wooden ones and the metal ones. Now, grills today, this morning I opened her up and she came out. She didn't bound herself out like she normally does, and she was dozing in the sun today and what have you, but in the evening she's bounced back again, so I don't really know what's going on with her. But I'll be keeping an eye on her. I'm sure she'll be okay. It's probably just having an off day. Well, that brings the diary up to date, and crikey, I'm at over 16 minutes. That was a lot to get through today. Never mind, that's all good, but let's have a look at what the diary says. Well, not the diary, even the calendar. It reads, continue staking tall plants, including delphiniums and lupins, and support the foliage of peonies. Heleniums, Michaelmas daisies and goldenrod will benefit if you pinch out their growing tips, as this will encourage them to form bushy, self-supporting plants. I've got nothing to really add to that. It's not vegetable related, which is a little bit annoying, but I'm really hoping next year to find a calendar for vegetable growers. I've searched for previous years and I've never found one I did find one years ago, but if anyone out there can recommend a vegetable calendar, that something like I'm doing at the moment, I really would appreciate it. Now, let's get on with attracting slugs and snails predators into the garden. As I said last week, I found this to be the number one way I deal with slugs and snails. It's also quite good because I find it fascinating watching the robins and the wagtails and the blue tits and the hedgehogs as well, for that matter, in my garden, thriving. I probably sound a bit like a naturalist geek, but it's entertainment in the garden, and I think when you are a gardener, you appreciate these things more. Now, I thought I would actually start with just the simple methods, really, that can be done right now, and they take seconds to minutes to do. Now, all these things are animals, and one thing that animals would need is water. Now, we don't really need ponds for this, although ponds do have a benefit, but I'll come to that later. But I simply place out an old bowl, kind of like a dog's bowl, and I fill that with water and place it outside, and I replenish this quite regularly. Use rainwater, that's fine. And this obviously sits on the ground for the hedgehogs to easily get at it. Birds can obviously use it as well. I do notice they're a bit more cautious when they're on the ground. But a bird bath, I don't actually have a bird bath, but in the past I have. And they seem to much prefer getting their water from a bird bath as well as having a bath, which is also an awesome sight. A combination of the two is probably the best thing to do it. I know a lot of people will have bird baths for the birds, but I want to remember the hedgehogs as well. Now, one other thing animals do is food. And they will be eating slugs and snails, of course, but that is not a huge part of their diet. I think I read hedgehogs only get really 5% of their diet from slugs and snails, which it makes a difference. I will say that. And there are times when the slugs and snails are obviously hibernating. These animals still need food. Now, I like to leave hedgehog food that is specifically for hedgehogs. I used a manufacturer called Spikes, and I've added a link to Amazon for this on this blog post. So check it out at thevegrowpodcast.co.uk/episode168 blah blah. You know what I mean. So I'm just a bit distracted. I've got a chicken just about to walk into my kitchen. So I just got to stop it here and sort her. Sorry about that. That was Grills. Literally walked into the kitchen right by where I'm sat. I don't normally have a door open when I'm recording, but I've had the door open today and it's kind of nice. Thankfully, my wife didn't see that, otherwise she'll be in trouble. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, the hedgehog food. I use a company called Spike that I've added to this link on the blog post. And they actually really like that food. And just leave it in, again, in like a dog's bowl, and they will eat it. Hedgehogs do not drink milk, despite common belief. It's actually quite dangerous for them to drink it. So the feed and the water is all you need for hedgehogs. Now the birds, I like to hang several bird feeders that I make sure has always got feed in it. Generally at this time of year, it's only bird seed in the feeders, and they're pretty happy with that. In the colder months, I would like to leave fat balls as well. That helps them survive the winter when they kind of need a bit more energy and a bit more food for them when less food is available. Now, housing. Now, I've built housing, or put up housing for both the hedgehogs and the birds, and she's about to come in the kitchen again. Excuse me. Out. Come on. Out. Yeah, I think it's safe to say Grills is back to her normal self. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, housing. I've put up... When I moved into this house and I learned there was hedgehogs in the garden, I got a big plastic container and I cut a hole into it as an entrance. Placed this under a bush, so it kind of gave the hedgehogs a bit of protection. I don't think the hedgehogs actually have ever used this, but they do nest underneath the sheds. And that's fine, I don't mind that. If they're going to get under there, then fine. That's why I like sheds raised off the ground, as it does give a hedgehog somewhere to crawl under and make their little nest. Now, in a greenhouse, I had a hedgehog take up residence underneath a water butt that I made a stand for from a pallet. And nothing particularly difficult, actually. I just placed a pallet on the ground, lined it with a bit of play and plywood board, and sat the water butt on that. Hedgehog moved into this, and again, fine with me. No use to me, that space. If they can use it, great. And they're eating slugs and snails for me. So that's a couple of really, really easy ways. And she came in the kitchen again. So sorry about that. It's not unusual for me to have the door open and try and come in. Anyway. Yeah, obviously hedgehog houses can be built or bought. But I think... it's much better that they find their own natural place rather than insisting they use these places. Of course, build your own, buy your own, it'll work. You know, at least you're making an effort. Bird boxes are another thing that I've got a few pot up. And again, I don't think the birds actually use them. But I'll come to that in a bit. Now, I've built bird boxes and I've brought bird boxes and... again, I've added a link to an RSPB website. Some good ideas for and plans for making bird boxes and as well as hedgehog houses and things like that. The thing with bird boxes is that it's a typical type of a circular hole is good for most types of small holes. Of course, the size of a hole will depend on what size of a bird that you want to encourage. Robins, however, prefer a much more open-fronted type. And again, these can be bought or ready-made. And I've got quite a few of those scattered around, but you probably see quite often in my videos and me even talking about it, behind my vegetable patch, well, to the side, I should say, behind my potting shed, I've got some rather large ivy that is pretty overgrown. In there lives at least 3 robins, 2 grey tits, a wagtail and stuff. They've all built their nests in there, which I'm kind of happy with. Obviously, they're obviously happy in there. They've built a more their homes in there. The ivy has probably promoted a much more natural habitat, which they prefer. Unfortunately, ivy is really difficult to control, but that's my issue and not so much the bird's issue. And of course, the ivy does actually produce some fruit that they will eat in the winter months as well. Now, I mentioned the habitat, or more natural habitat here, with the ivy. Now, this brings me on to the next one of creating natural habitats for wildlife. And it's not that difficult, but it has certain drawbacks. But it also has other bonuses, because it will make a more suitable habitat for other slug and snails predators, such as frogs, toads or beetles. And the easiest way I found is to have a little area that just gets a bit unruly, and you don't mow it or you don't cut it down. A damp, cold area will give frogs a habitat, so a little area where it gets a bit boggy sort of thing. And that will do wonders for many, many predators. A pond is obviously a wildlife haven, and I'd love to have a pond here, but it's not really possible at the moment. It may happen in the future. On my previous allotment, I did have a nice little pond there, made out of an old bath, and we had a bug hotel next to it, and it brought in so much wildlife. So there was dragonflies and various things like that. Of course, as gardeners, we tend to be tidy, but a little bit of untidiness will do wonders for wildlife. As I said, little areas just get overgrown. Rocks and tiles for frogs to shelter in does wonders. An old branch or log just left on the ground to rot will do wonders for beetles too. Also, allowing gaps under fences for hedgehogs to roam around a larger area will also help the hedgehog population. Now, I've got quite a big interest in hedgehogs, as you've probably noticed. They are dwindling in their numbers, I'm afraid to say. And it is possible to try to get hedgehogs that have been rescued, but they have pretty strict rules about that. I've gone onto a website called hedgehogstreet.org, who gives information on how to attract hedgehogs and stuff. Please, that's on the Veg Grower podcast website. And if you sort of say if you haven't got hedgehogs already, then you need to look at why you've got no hedgehogs before you look at adopting hedgehogs. You know, to be honest, I can go on for ages about how to promote wildlife, and I want to keep it simple. And these few little tips are obviously easy: bird food, water, bird box or houses, bird boxes, hedgehog hotels, natural areas, and ditch the slug pellets. These measures will, honestly, they will work, and slug pellets kill everything else off, unfortunately. I'm going to wrap up now. That's it for this week. No, actually, one more thing. In tomorrow's video on YouTube, I'm launching a challenge. I'll start the challenge on the website as well. And the idea is to take a 1 metre by 60 centimetre area, and the challenge is to get the most amount of food out of it. It's going to be difficult to judge, but if anybody does it and takes part, send me pictures, send me photos, keep me informed, and I'll judge it on that. That'll run till the 30th of September. I'll put a blog post out on Friday detailing it. So that is it for this week. Anyway, as I said, please think about how getting slug and snail predators into your garden. And if you do it, let me know how you get on. If you've got any photos, I'd love to see them, of course, and I'd love to share them with others as well. Or if you have any tips, then please share them too. Visit veggrowerpodcast.co.uk, a comment on any of the posts. Alternatively, email me, richard@theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk. Until next time, please take care, and I will speak to you all then.